Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be diving into software.
Specifically.
Yeah, specifically how we get it to work.
How we access it.
Exactly.
How we utilize it.
Okay, so have you ever heard of Microsoft Activation Scripts?
We're talking about MAS.
MAS, yeah.
An intriguing open source tool.
Interesting.
That's shaking up the way we think about software licensing.
Yeah, so we got a stack of info here.
Straight from the source.
Straight from the source.
Microsoft Activation Scripts, MAS.
MAS.
Website.
Yeah. And they make it sound so easy, almost fun.
Approachable.
Approachable. Like a life hack for your computer.
Yeah. Like a little...
Little heart emojis next to the PowerShell.
Yeah.
Commands the whole shebang.
It's an interesting approach.
It is an interesting approach.
Given the subject matter.
Right.
Which can be quite technical.
Yeah.
But they're going for this user-friendly vibe.
Totally. Like, hey, activating your software without paying.
Can be fun.
Can be fun and easy.
Yeah.
But let's dig into what they actually offer here.
So at its core, MAS provides a set of tools to activate Windows and Office software.
Without needing to purchase a license key.
Right. And they offer different methods.
They do.
Each exploiting a different vulnerability.
Oh.
In Microsoft's activation process.
So it's like a master key that unlocks all these different doors.
In a way, yeah.
Okay.
The website lists four primary activation methods.
Okay.
HWID, OHOOK, KMS38, and online KMS.
Wow.
Each has its own quirks.
Okay.
Pros and cons, and offers different durations of activation.
Like a subscription service.
Precisely.
But for, you know,
yeah.
Bypassing subscription.
Exactly. For instance, HWID.
Okay.
Which stands for Hardware ID.
Okay.
Offers what they claim to be permanent activation.
Hold on. Permanent. Tell me more about this HWID magic.
So think of your computer's hardware as having a unique fingerprint.
Oh.
That's essentially what a hardware ID is.
Okay.
When you activate Windows, legitimately, this fingerprint gets linked to your license.
Right.
MAS's HWID method manipulates this process, essentially tricking your system into thinking it's already been activated.
So I'm guessing that's why they call it permanent?
Yes.
As long as your hardware stays the same, Windows keeps seeing that familiar fingerprint. And doesn't ask any questions.
You got it.
Oh,
but it's important to note that these methods aren't foolproof.
Right.
Microsoft constantly updates its activation processes.
Right.
So what works today might not work tomorrow.
That's a digital arms race then.
You could say that.
Okay.
But let's move on to another intriguing method.
Okay.
OHOOK.
Ooh.
Which focuses on activating Microsoft Office.
Okay.
This one's a bit different from HWID.
Okay. Lay it on me. What's so special about OHOOK?
Imagine a security guard checking tickets at the entrance to a concert.
Okay.
OHOOK essentially bypasses this guard.
Sneaking in?
Preventing the office applications from even checking for a valid license in the first place.
So it's like sneaking in through the back door while everyone else is queuing up with their tickets?
You could put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's clever, but again, it
yeah.
highlights that constant battle between developers and those trying to circumvent their systems.
So they're offering this for free. That's pretty wild.
And that's where open sourcing comes into play.
Okay.
That's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
The fact that MAS is open source means its code is publicly available.
Wow.
Anyone can examine it.
Okay.
Contribute to it.
Uh-huh.
Or even use it as a base to build their own tools.
That's incredibly transparent for something that could be seen as, well, legally questionable.
And that's the paradox, isn't it?
Right.
On one hand,
yeah.
it's a testament to open source development,
yeah.
fostering collaboration and transparency.
Right.
On the other hand, it also means these tools are out in the open,
right.
readily available to anyone with an internet connection.
Yeah. It seems like opening a Pandora's box in a way.
It does.
But before we dive deeper into those implications,
okay.
let's unpack the remaining two methods.
Okay.
KMS38 and online KMS.
All right.
They sound a bit more complex.
They are a bit more involved as they deal with emulating a system used by large organizations.
Right.
Imagine a big corporation needing to activate hundreds of computers.
Yeah.
They typically use something called a key management service or KMS server.
Okay, so KMS is like a central hub for activation keys within a company's network.
Exactly. KMS 38 and online KMS, in essence, create this illusion of a company network.
Okay.
Tricking your system into thinking it's part of a larger ecosystem where activation is handled internally.
So that's pretty clever. So KMS 38 and online KMS Create like a fake VIP line to get your software activated.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
Now, there's a reason why KMS-38 has that specific year attached to its name.
2038.
It's designed to work until 2038.
2038, is that some kind of digital expiration date for this kind of activation?
It has to do with how time is represented in certain computer systems.
Okay.
But that's a story for another deep dive.
Okay. We'll save that rabbit hole for another time.
Another day.
What about online KMS then? Is that another permanent solution?
Not quite.
Okay.
Online KMS usually provides activation for a limited time, usually around 180 days.
Okay.
And it relies on connecting to a remote KMS server.
Okay.
Think of it like borrowing a guest pass.
Okay.
It works for a while.
Yeah.
But needs renewal.
So like a digital parking meter for your software.
Exactly.
Okay. And I'm guessing MAS makes renewing that parking time pretty simple.
Exactly. A simple script and you're good to go for another 180 days.
Wow.
It's a fascinating example of how the developers behind MAS have a deep understanding of these systems.
We've covered the what and the how of MAS, but what does it all mean?
Right.
What are the implications of having a tool like this out in the open?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
It forces us to confront some complex issues surrounding software ownership, accessibility, and the very ethics of how we use and distribute technology.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
On the surface, MAS seems like a godsend for anyone who struggled with the cost and complexity of software licensing.
Yeah. When you dig a little deeper, it throws up all sorts of questions about intellectual property and the sustainability of software development.
Right. Like, I get it. Software can be expensive and the allure of a free pass is strong. But if everyone starts using tools like MAS, doesn't that hurt the companies who make the software?
Right.
How do they continue to innovate and provide updates if you're not getting paid?
That's the heart of the debate.
Yeah.
It's easy to view large software companies as these faceless entities, but in reality, they're made up of developers, designers, engineers, all relying on these licenses to fund their work.
And let's not forget about the security aspect. I mean, when you're using a tool like MAS, you're essentially taking a shortcut, right?
Right.
Bypassing the official channels.
Absolutely.
Doesn't that open you up to potential risks?
Absolutely. One of the biggest risks is downloading malware disguised as MAS.
Oh, wow.
Because the code is open source.
Yeah.
It's relatively easy for malicious actors to modify it or create fake versions that look legitimate.
So it's a bit of a double-edged sword.
It is.
You get the convenience, but at the potential cost of your digital security.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that old saying, if something seems too good to be true.
It probably is.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important to have these conversations.
Right.
To weigh the potential benefits against the very real risks.
Totally.
It's not about demonizing tools like MAS.
Right.
But rather understanding the complexities they represent.
It's a bit like the digital equivalent of the Wild West out there, right?
Yeah.
New tools and technologies popping up all the time.
Pushing the boundaries.
Pushing the boundaries of what's possible and sometimes what's legal. It's both exciting and a little bit scary.
It certainly keeps things interesting.
It does.
But let's shift gears for a moment.
Okay.
And talk about the elephant in the room.
Okay.
What does Microsoft think about all of this?
Right. Microsoft, the company whose entire business model seems to be challenged by a tool like MAS, I imagine they're not exactly thrilled.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
And while there hasn't been a major crackdown on MAS users, it's not like Microsoft is oblivious to its existence.
Right.
They're constantly updating their activation processes, patching vulnerabilities, playing a cat and mouse game with tools like MAS.
So it's like a chess match.
Exactly.
With each side making moves and counter moves.
Exactly. It's a reminder that technology is constantly evolving and the lines between right and wrong can sometimes get blurry.
Blurry indeed. And speaking of blurry lines, what about the legal side of things? Where does MAS actually stand legally?
That's where it gets even more complicated.
Okay.
There's no clear-cut answer, as laws surrounding software licensing vary from country to country.
Okay, so using MAS might be perfectly legal in one part of the world and a serious offense in another.
It's entirely possible.
Wow.
And even within a specific country, the legal interpretation can be complex and open to debate.
Right.
It often hinges on how the software is used, whether it's for personal or commercial purposes, and the specific terms of service of the software being activated.
It sounds like a legal minefield, to be honest.
It can be.
Yeah.
And that's why it's crucial for users to be aware of the potential risks and to make informed decisions.
Right.
MAS might seem like a quick and easy solution, But it's important to remember that there are legal and ethical considerations at play.
It all comes back to being informed, right?
Absolutely. Knowledge is power, especially in the digital age.
Right.
Understanding how these tools work, their implications, and the potential risks is essential for anyone navigating the ever-evolving landscape of technology.
It's a lot to wrap your head around.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
But it's a conversation worth having.
For sure.
Tools like MAS challenge our traditional notions of software ownership.
Right.
And force us to confront complex questions about accessibility innovation and the role of technology in our lives.
It's like we're peeking behind the curtain of the software world, right? Seeing all the gears turning.
Yeah, it really reveals the hidden complexities.
It makes you realize how much complexity is hidden beneath the surface of what we use every day.
Right. We just click and go, but there's a whole system behind it.
Exactly. And tools like MAS, they kind of throw a wrench into that system.
They do.
They make us question the status quo, the assumptions we have about who should have access to software and how.
They challenge that traditional business model of software as a product.
Right.
With MAS, it's almost as if you're shifting from a mindset of ownership to one of access.
Interesting.
Instead of buying a physical copy, mm-hmm. you're essentially accessing its functionality,
right.
albeit through unofficial channels.
So it's like the difference between owning a car and using a ride-sharing service.
Exactly.
Both get you where you need to go, but the underlying economics are completely different.
A great analogy.
And it kind of highlights this broader trend in technology towards subscription-based services and cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
Software is becoming less about owning a physical product and more about accessing a service.
It is.
Which makes tools like MAS even more intriguing, right?
Well, yeah.
They're almost a natural consequence of this shift towards access over ownership.
It's an interesting thought.
It is.
As software becomes increasingly cloud-based, the lines between what constitutes owning a piece of software and simply accessing it?
They get blurrier.
They get blurrier.
And that's where things get really interesting, right?
Yeah.
It's not just about the technology anymore. It's about the philosophical and economic implications.
Absolutely.
Who controls access?
Yeah.
Who benefits from these new models?
Big questions.
Huge.
And those are questions that extend far beyond the realm of software.
Right.
We see them playing out in debates about digital rights management, net neutrality, even the ownership of digital assets in the metaverse.
It's a whole new frontier full of possibilities and challenges.
It is.
But let's bring it back to MAS for a moment.
Yeah.
What do you think the future holds for tools like this?
It's hard to say for certain.
Yeah.
But as long as there are complex software licensing models and barriers to access, there will always be people seeking alternative solutions.
And developers finding creative ways to provide them.
Exactly. It's a constant game of cat and mouse.
Right.
Regardless of what the future holds for MAS,
yeah.
it's clear that it has sparked an important conversation about software accessibility, affordability, and the evolving nature of ownership in the digital age.
Absolutely. So to our listeners out there, if this deep dive has piqued your curiosity, we encourage you to do your own research. Explore the complexities of software licensing, and consider the ethical questions surrounding access and ownership in the digital world.
Because ultimately, these aren't just technical issues.
Right.
They're societal ones that will shape the future of how we live, work, and interact with technology.
Well said. And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into the world of Microsoft Activation Scripts. It's been a journey through lines of code, legal gray areas, and philosophical debates. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.